Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, a program that values the potential of knowledge, collaboration, and growth. The show is hosted by Denise Griffiths, who is known as an intensely curious nerd in stilettos. Each Wednesday, she is joined by co-host Ben Gay III, a renowned figure in the sales world. Ben is recognized for introducing The Closers, one of the most popular and powerful sales training materials ever produced. Having been mentored by Dr. Napoleon Hill himself, Ben has gained a wealth of knowledge in sales and life. Throughout the show, Denise and Ben delve into the world of sales, entrepreneurship, and success, exploring Ben's vast experience from guiding and mentoring countless professionals to achieve unparalleled success in their careers.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Closers Inner Circle podcast, hosted by Your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths. And together with my co-host, Ben Gay III, we're diving into the world of sales mastery with the gem from The Closers Part 2. Now, these books, Parts 1 and 2, are widely known as the sales Bibles. And if you don't have them on your entrepreneurial shelves, get them. So today is a continuation of the past 2 weeks where we have opened up the chapter called And Another Thing. I love that chapter. It's a chapter with a lot of wisdom nuggets to share, and we're probably going to spend a few weeks going through it because there's just too much to miss up on. So today we are making our way through that chapter, and we're beginning with page 226. And be sure to go back and listen to those shows where Ben gives us a glimpse to his incredible sales mastery journey. And this is where he shares years of dedicated study and real-world experience that has culminated in a profound understanding of the sales craft. And Ben's insights will always serve as a reminder that success in sales isn't just about what you know, but how you apply that knowledge and write this down with authenticity and perseverance. Ben, it's Wednesday. It's my favorite day of the week.
How are you doing?
I'm peachy.
For you people who are not Southerners, peachy can have all sorts of meanings. And if a Southerner tells you, bless your heart, it doesn't sound like, it isn't what it sounds like.
It's not a blessing. No, it's a condemnation.
So when Denise says things to you, listen for the tone and the words. And if you don't know, call a Southerner.
If I say I'm peachy, like I just did, it's all good. But if I say I'm peachy, that means go to another zip code now. No more talking.
Get away from me.
That's exactly right. So most people who know me are like, oh, I'll call you later. Okay, bye. That's off we go. Let's talk about this chapter because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is not the biggest chapter. I know sales infiltration is, yeah. But I think this is the second largest chapter. And honestly, it is chock full of nuggets. So where do you want to start today?
I appreciate that. As I've told Denise, the way I write when I can, sometimes ghostwriting things for other people, I have to do it their way. But the way I do it, I was raised on the Reader's Digest. And it was always in the living room, but where I remember it most is on the water cabinet behind the toilet. And when you went to the bathroom and came out, you were expected to talk reasonably intelligently about some subject. And the joy of the Reader's Digest was each chapter was quite short, and I'm making up numbers, but I probably 50 different chapters. So in one edition, you could learn 50 things. And I loved it. Because as a writing style, I didn't have to write Gone with the Wind every time I wrote a book. I wrote bite-sized chapters, The Closers Part 2 being a great example of that. Now, within that book, there's chapters like this where I broke it down even further. In other words, on page 226, we're going to talk about Here Lies You, among a couple others today. And if you look at it, if you have your book in front of you, it's only five paragraphs long. So this chapter is a whole bunch of chapters that weren't long enough to stand alone, and then they developed sort of a theme. It was those things I picked up as I went along. It wasn't, most of them were not the subject of a seminar or the subject of a book I read or whatever. They were little snippets, and I'm an avid note taker. I've probably taken four notes this morning, and I haven't been out of the house and now the office. Just things that popped into my head, and I wrote them down. Just shared one with Denise a few minutes ago about some projects she and I are working on together. So this chapter is snippets from my note taking, had an idea, something reminded me of something, but they weren't chapter long ones. And the end result was shorter, except for sales infiltration, the last chapter in the book, which is the best thing I've ever written about selling, best thing that's ever been written about selling, in my humble opinion. Except for that one, this chapter people zero in on because they can get this little nugget, that little nugget, this little nugget. The first one in this chapter on page 226 is Here Lies You. And I tell the story about sitting in the sales meeting with Bill Dempsey, who was my original sponsor when I got into serious money making, and Jimmy Rucker, my high school running buddy, first business partner, and the greatest salesman I ever personally worked with. And the story goes, I won't read it to you, but the gist of it is Bill Dempsey was up doing a sales training meeting one Saturday morning in Atlanta. And right in the middle, mid-sentence, he stopped and said, "Okay, you all just died of heart attacks. They're going to take your body to the salespeople's graveyard for burial. You get to write your own salesperson's epitaph for your tombstone. And since you're salespeople," he said, "it can be as long and flowery as you want. Write it the way you want it to turn out. Write it the way you hope you've earned when you die." Somebody, I fear, oh, Jimmy Carter, President Carter's minister, once said in the Plain Baptist Church, Plains Baptist Church, when Jimmy was still going there. I should call him President Carter, pardon me. I'm from Georgia, where he's Jimmy. But the minister said, "If you were arrested today and charged with being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you?"
I remember that.
Yeah, isn't that powerful? And in line with this, here lies you. If you were arrested today or died today, would there be enough evidence to prove you're a successful salesperson? If the answer to that is no, then get to work. You're listening to this because you're alive, so you got time to change anything that's not right. I've written, for instance, Denise is working on the closers part four, which will be her book, and I'll contribute to it. And I will write the foreword for it because I know Denise, I'm alive. I admire so much the work she does. So I'll write that foreword unless I fall dead this afternoon. In
Oh,
which case,
no, don't do that. Can you write it now, just in case?
well, I was
Come
going to
on, this
say,
is important.
in which case, Gigi will go to my file,
Okay.
she's right in the front of the file, where I have written the foreword for all books that come, all closers books that come after my passing or incapacity or whatever. It's already written, and it covers how who approves them after I'm gone, et cetera. But it reminded me of this chapter, Here Lies You. Since we all have to deal with our mortality,
We do.
yeah, you might want to work on what they're going to say when you're gone so that they'll have fond memories of you and so on. I have also, Denise, I'll perhaps share it with you someday. I've also written my obituary for publication in the local papers. I don't want to leave that to other people. I don't trust
Wouldn't
them.
either. Yeah, I'm always surprised when people say, "Well, did you know this about you?" I'm like, "Who in the heck are you talking about?"
Yeah.
So,
Well,
no, I'm with you on that. Do it yourself.
Yeah, there's a, yeah, get it done and leave a check, because the death notice is free, but the obituary I just paid for, one for my brother-in-law and before that my mother-in-law and before that another brother-in-law, and I was surprised. I thought, I'm not going to write such long ones in the future. I didn't know they charge by the word, and there I was making up stuff
Oh.
to make them look good. Yeah,
Oh,
better
that's
make them
awesome.
look better.
There you go.
But anyway, Dempsey's point was, and after all that chatter, it's probably important that you probably already understand it. But the point is, build a life, and or in this case, a sales career that would live up to the obituary or the here lies thing, that would live up to it and be you. We attended a funeral not too long ago for my barber at the time. He preferred to be called a hairstylist, who was a Marine, had a dog named Sarge, a little bulldog named Sarge, and talked about the Marines this and the Marine that. And in his barber shop, you thought you stepped into boot camp. It was Marine theme top to bottom. And I thought, well, that's great that he cares that much about it. At his funeral, and acknowledging that, one of his good friends stood up and said, I almost said his name. I don't want to do that to his memory. We'll say Bob. It wasn't. We'll say Bob. We all love Bob, and we loved his love of the Marine Corps, although he was never in it. He admired the Marine Corps and so on and so. And I thought, well, I'm glad that came after his death. I've known him for 10 years, and it was Marine this, Marine that, stories about Marines, Sergeant so and so, the drill instructor he had in boot camp, and everything. And none of it was true.
And somebody ratted him out? That's just not nice.
But I think the point was that there were a lot of people sitting in the room who knew he'd never been in the Marines. So
Oh,
we couldn't do, plays taps or something at the
right.
end. He'd never been in the service at all. I was in the Coast Guard. I just assumed they didn't mention that at my funeral. I'm proud of what I did, but we didn't do much. Those are the little white boats up close to the shore, and we stay close to the shore because we don't want to get our feet wet in the Coast Guard. It was great food, good friendship, and not a whole lot else, with a few interesting exceptions. Anyway, design your life, write it down. And anytime you write a sentence that isn't really accurate, but you wish it was, keep a copy of what you wrote and begin to live up to that. One of the, I've always tried to be a kind person, for instance, but it wasn't foremost in my mind. But I added it to my morning and evening prayer recently. Lord, please help me be a better, stronger, kinder person. One filled with gratitude for all that you've done for me. But I really hit on kinder because it's become a mission of mine. It's not, I'm kind, I was kind in general. People, I think, usually would say, if I didn't have my sarcastic hat on that at that moment, they would say, oh, he was a nice guy and he gave me compliments and so on. It is now a mission. First thing in the morning to Gigi, I love you, sweetheart. Last thing every time I leave a room that Gigi's in, I love you. I mean, if it's to go to from the office to the bathroom. And the reason is, I want her to be able to say at my funeral, the last thing he said to me was, I love you, and have it be true. And I'm at that age and I have an irregular heartbeat where it may well be the last thing that I say to her. There may not be a lot of warning. I might just drop dead. So I want to leave that with her. But when I meet somebody now, before, even before I try and focus in on their name, and I'm not very good at names, and I have face blindness, so I've introduced myself to some local people probably 20 to 25 times. Hi, I'm Ben Gay. And I say, we know, we know.
But they
We
also
had.
know that you have face blindness, so they don't want to hit you with something.
Oh yeah, I tell them all the time.
Yeah.
Or if they go, "Do you remember me?" I say, "You got to work with me. I got face blindness. I don't remember my wife.
Oh.
In a crowded department store, I have lost her many times, or taken the arm of somebody who has long black hair and about her size and build, and
I
said,
used to
I
lose
want
my
to,
mom all the time because she's
yeah."
little. She was tiny. She's 5 foot nothing much and a half. And I'm 5 foot 7 and a half. That half is important because I'm the runt in my family.
Yeah.
And I finally said, "Mom, when we go out in public, you have to wear red. You're not in my line of sight. I'm going to lose you." She didn't like
Absolutely.
it.
Yeah, I've lost. I'll tell you a quick story, and it has a bad word in it. So when I get right down to the end, if you're sensitive, stick fingers in your ear. I went up to Midas Muffler or some local repair shop to do something to one of my cars a few years ago. And they didn't have a waiting room. I said, I always bring a book. Is there someplace I can sit down and read? Or is a magazine in this case? And they said, yeah, there's a picnic table out there and it's nice weather. Sit out there. I said, great. So I walk out and there's a lady there on her phone. I didn't want to act like I was eavesdropping, so I walked away from the table. But when she was obviously through the call, I came up behind her, opposite end of the table, as far away as I could get from her, and said, "Excuse me, would you mind if I sat here and read my magazine?" "Absolutely not." I sit down, start flipping through the magazine. 2 or 3 minutes goes by. She said, "Don't you recognize me, Benjamin?" Benjamin is.
Benjamin, uh-oh.
You're sort of close to me at that point because only my mother
Don't
called
tell
me
me it
that.
was your sister and you didn't know who she
No, she was in Atlanta.
was.
I'm
Okay.
in California. So I said, having face blindness, I said, "Oh, of course. I'm so sorry. And I hope you're having a great day, blah, blah, blah." I go back to my magazine. She said, "Who am I?" And I said, "Well, I have face blindness. Work with me." And she said, "Well, just think." So I thought, and we, Gigi and I, eat out a lot. I said, "You're a waitress at one of the restaurants we go to." And I was so proud of myself because I took in, 80% of the locals that I don't know really. And she said, "No." And I thought, oh, she's going to be a hard one. She said, after a while, she said, "Think of your former wives." Gigi is my third wife. She said, "Think of your former wives." I said, "Oh, of course, my fault. You're either a friend of Carlotta's or Marcia's." She said, "I am Carlotta now."
She called you a bad word.
Yeah, she called me a bad word.
And man,
So,
you earned that one. I
yeah,
have, I
now
wasn't
in
proud.
my defense, we were only together 10 years.
Oh God, Ben, stop talking. Seriously.
It takes a while to dial in, and 10 years apparently wasn't enough. But her brother, who's not a big fan of her, she just died, by the way, a few
Oh, I'm so
weeks
sorry.
ago. I read it in the paper. Her brother, who was not one of her big fans, came up to me one day in a grocery store and he'd heard the story. And he says, "Ben, that's absolutely perfect. I'm sure it was spontaneous, but if you had worked on that for a year, it couldn't have been any better or any more devastating." She was really into her looks and she was a pretty lady. So that was her, the beginning and end of her existence was, "Hello, I'm pretty." And, apparently not recognizing her after 10 years at high noon. Bright sunlight at a picnic table in an open area within, I guess, what's that, 5.5, 6 feet of her. Apparently, that didn't endear me to her.
You think? It's and sometimes people do that on purpose. My father was a difficult man, and we didn't really know him very well. And my sister, the one next to me in birth, really didn't like him at all. He didn't like her either. It was the weirdest thing. And they had nothing to do with each other for many, many years. And at some point, she was almost forced to meet up with him, family thing, or I can't remember what it was. I wasn't there. The word came back to me that she walked over to him, she looked him right in the eye and introduced her full name and shook his hand, and I lost it. And she said, "Nice to see you," and walked away, and that was the last time they ever spoke. And it was deliberate. I think she practiced it. The whole family just went, oh.
But the whole family understood.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, somebody's a jackass. Everybody knows it. I don't know how I know that, but I know
I don't
that.
know how you do either, but I like what you're thinking about being kind. I had a friend of mine. We were talking. We were driving to Atlanta, Georgia, and that's a 10-hour drive from here. And we got to talking about all kinds of different things. And I said something about, because I don't find that I'm the most compassionate person. I tend to, make a decision and then run you through with my sword. I just don't. So, and she said, "Denise, do you really think you're not a nice, kind person?" I said, "Not really." And she looked at me, she pulled the car over and she said, "Sit down and let's talk." I said, "I'm sitting." She said, "That's what I mean." And she just slapped me around the head and shoulders verbally for a while. And she said, "You don't know yourself at all, do you?" I said, "Well, I thought I did." But, I tend to knee jerk and I tend to say what I'm thinking. And, apparently, I'm not nearly as bad as I thought I was. Who knows?
And also, not everything comes out of your mouth, because a lot of people who think that I'm this kind, wonderful person, and I'm really working on it now. I'm telling you, if I meet you, bang, I find something nice to say about you before we discuss anything else. Something nice. Your hair, your face, your shirt, your blouse, I guess women call it, whatever. Something kind comes out. We met a lady the other day. I was just fascinated looking at her. She was short. She reminded me of my sister. She was short and overweight, but she had the prettiest face. And she was sitting there with her husband, and they were at the far end of the bar. We were sitting at a table. On the way out, I went over and I said, "Excuse me." And I said to the man, "I'm not hitting on your wife. My wife is here. But I just couldn't leave the restaurant without telling you how beautiful you were. Like my sister, she has a gorgeous face, and age and weight hasn't taken its toll on her face, and pretty hair and everything." I said, "You're just absolutely gorgeous. Were you the head cheerleader, or the married the quarterback, or something?" And she told me a little bit about herself. But as we left, she grabbed my arm and she said, "You have made my day, my week, my month, and change my life. Thank you." And so I thought, thank you, Jesus. This kind stuff really works.
It does.
She'll
And it
remember
helps
that
you feel good.
till the end of her days.
Yeah, you really do. You just never know. And I have to be cautious about what I'm thinking or saying because, sir, you and I have talked about this. No filters. That's not always a good thing. I have one of those brains. If I'm thinking it, I'm probably going to say it. I'm probably not going to add an FU after it, but that can happen too.
Well, here's what I was going to say about you and me. Maybe our self-image isn't what it ought to be based on what other people see, because they don't know what we didn't say. Because there are lots of people who think I'm a kind, wonderful person, but I had
You
to.
are.
I did. Well, I didn't lie. I find the good things and talk about those. Not you're an unmitigated jackass, or I don't like being around you. J. Douglas Edwards, the great sales trainer, I wrote his book for him, Sales Closing Power, was wonderful on stage for his era. He's one of those people. It's a little dated, but that's fine. He's still good. But I was telling Napoleon Hill one day, Dr. Hill, I was telling him, "Doug Edwards walked past my office and I looked up and I said, I can't stand him." Because he was an arrogant jackass, dead now, so dead for many years. I'm not concerned about word getting back to him. And he says, "Well, why do you have him working for us?" I said, "Because on stage, he's really good." And Dr. Hill said, "Well, good. Put him on stage and don't invite him up to the house." that sort of cleared it up for me. So I could be polite to Doug and tell him he had a nice suit on. I didn't, every time I saw him, have to say, "You're a jackass, an arrogant, egotistical jackass."
And he
So that's where
probably
you
could,
draw the line.
yeah, if you had continued to think that way when you saw him, at some point he would have understood that. But if you were able to swerve away from that and say, "Hey, great shoes," or "I like your haircut," or, "Saw you on stage, you're phenomenal," that's a whole different
Right.
energy. It's a
And
completely
that's honest. If the shoes are nice, even jackasses have nice shoes.
They do.
And he proved that.
Well, I
So that's,
wanted to
go
go
ahead.
back a little further down, and here lies you. I mean, we got a little bit off track, but we always do, so I don't worry about it. But you said that here, Dempsey said somebody wanted to, once these guys started writing, then somebody said, "Well, do we have to hand this in to you?" And Dempsey said, "No, it's not important that I know
Right.
you wrote, it's only important that you know." And we've been talking about that in kind of a roundabout way. So he continued to say, "Now, from this day forward, do everything possible to make yourself worthy of the sales epitaph you just wrote." And then you went on to say that that moment stuck with you all those years. And psychologically, it is sound. It's very, very sound.
Absolutely. And self-talk is so important that you can become that person. I used to have to remember, okay, here's a person, be kind. Now it just is automatic. It's become part of me through prayer and self-talk. I think I may have told you this
And
one
paying
time.
attention to how you're speaking. If you're speaking of, to other about other people that way, what are you speaking about yourself? Listen, if somebody spoke to me the way I catch myself speaking to me, I would need bail money. I'm not joking. I'd be
Exactly. No,
in jail.
that's how come you didn't think, your image was wrong and your lady friend corrected you. Absolutely true. Quick one about how I started learning this. There's a guy at our local post office named David. Wonderful guy. He's like a like Valentino, swashbuckling, handsome. The ladies love him. There'll be nobody in line at the three windows next to him, and four people in his line. They want to spend time with David, and they're always almost always ladies. So any way he has a charm about him. So we walk in one day, Gigi's with me, walk up, and his thing was open. We walked up to him, and David said, "Hey, how are you?" It was a Monday, because he said, "How was your weekend?" And I told him, "We did this, we did that, and so, and it was wonderful. We had some friends over, and so." And then I gave him my credit card, and because we were done, I'd answered his question. And Gigi said, "And how was your weekend, David?"
Yeah.
I
I knew she was going to
went,
do that.
"Oh,
Yeah.
oh, never crossed my mind."
This
And
is
it
a
hadn't.
two-way conversation. A lot of people forget that. Listen, and I had to learn this in the South, because this is a thing. When we walk up and say, "Hey, how are you?" we do want to know, but
Right.
it's a two-way conversation.
Right.
But you
And
don't
when
just say, "Hey,
Southerners,
I'm good," and then keep on going. You might as well hit them with your car. That's rude.
and when a Southerner says to you, "Y'all come over now here,"
We
they
don't
mean
mean a word
that.
of it. No, I
Oh,
don't.
no. Well, there are Southerners who do.
They do, yeah, for the most part. And I avoid those people. It's like, no. I have a sign on my front door that says, "If you weren't invited or I'm expecting you, do not knock or ring." And I mean it.
Yeah,
Dead serious
that's
about
my attitude. Our doormat says, "Go away, come back with wine."
it. Listen, we are getting way far out, but I'm loving this conversation. So the next thing, we're still on page 226, and that says, "Let them see it." What do you mean by that?
Well, we're talking about in selling word pictures. There are certain things that if you're selling, you can demonstrate it. Here's the riding lawnmower. Get on it. It has 4.5 horsepower. Been a long time since I've sold lawnmowers, so I don't know if that's good or bad, but whatever. It's got 4.5 horsepower. It'll do this. It has a 42-inch swath, so you'll be done quicker, et cetera, et cetera. If you're outside, let's rev it up, boom, pull the cord or hit the key or whatever, and so on. That's you don't need a word picture there so much, except picture your yard mowed faster, more pleasantly, and so on. But there are a lot of products that you have to draw the picture for them. Jesus talked in word pictures to make it easier for people. I assume, I don't mean to speak on behalf of Jesus, but I assume to make it easier for us to understand. He told stories. He drew word pictures in our mind. All great salespeople do that. They take you there. Jim Rohn used to talk about some friend of his. He said it was more fun to send him on the tri on a trip and have him come back and tell you about it than to go yourself. He said it was just, he was so descriptive in his conversations about he went there, he went to the Vatican, he went whatever. He said you felt like you were there. Those are word pictures. And in selling, they are so helpful. As you know, you say, how are you? And I'll tell you a story. I'm from the South. We all talk a lot, most of us. Talk a lot, and we draw word pictures and so on, and it is so effective. Zig Ziglar's entire career was built on telling stories, putting you in situations so you could see it and feel it. That's the same thing when you're selling a product. If you're selling a boat, and you're not near water, it's on a trailer in a lot. You need to put them in the boat with their families mentally. Put them in the boat with their families. Feel the sun, feel the wind in their hair. Tell them about all the joys they're going to have. If you're in Atlanta, there's Lake Sinclair and Lake Lanier and Lake Altoona. I would say, where are you going to float it and find out which are the lakes? And if I'm in the boat selling business, I know some of the stops along the way, places to see at Lake Lanier, places to go at Lake Sinclair. And Lake Lanier, I think, is the biggest of them. So there's got to be 15 restaurants around it. Have you ever been to the whatever? Oh, you're going to love it because they got a great dock. And when you pull up, there's usually somebody there to catch your line and help you tie up. You and your family are going to absolutely love living, experiencing this boat. There's the boat sitting in front of you on a trailer, but you haven't heard the engine, you haven't heard, felt the wind in your hair, you haven't felt the sun on your face, and smelled the water. Even fresh water has an aroma about
Oh,
on it.
yeah.
So they haven't been through that. Your job is to take them out of the asphalt parking lot, drop them in that boat, and rev it up and let them feel the total experience. When they do, they are far more likely to buy it. So it's I hammer on that constantly, but it's word pictures. I may have told you this. This isn't a word picture, but it changed literally changed my life. I was in California, from Atlanta, in California, out for 30 days of training. Forgot my manual. We were in a training room. Forgot my manual where we'd gone back to private rooms to practice the script. And so I went back to get it. I walk in the training room behind the then president of the company, Fred Pape, and the owner of the company, chairman of the board, William Penn Patrick. And they're looking at a Betamax recorder with a screen flipped up. It looked like one of those old television consoles. And they're looking at a video, and the video happens to be one I did that morning. And Fred Pape said, he's good. And Bill Patrick said, I will pay more for the ability to effectively communicate than any other skill. So I did the moonwalk out. They never knew I was there until years later when I
I'm
told Bill
picturing
Patrick.
it.
Yeah. And I went back and Bill Dempsey said, where's your manual? And I said, I'll get it later. We'll work out of yours. Go. But I had just made the decision to be a professional speaker an effective communicator, and then I could add on, I didn't think of all this at the time, someone who could build word pictures and put people in our product, in our business, where they could see it and feel it. And with cosmetics and money, those were the two things we were selling, cosmetics and money. That's a little difficult until you talk about, if you're talking to a man, your wife feeling so much better about herself because her skin is clear and her makeup, she's been taught to put on makeup, and she's just a different person as a result of that. Or, I remember the first time I pulled up to the office in my new Cadillac with $5,000, which is $50,000 today, with $5,000 in my pocket. I don't know. I felt different. And you could see the prospect thinking, new Cadillac, $5,000 cash in his pocket. Whoa, that's a word picture. So you can do it with intangibles. Tangibles that aren't possible to demonstrate at that moment, at that place. You can do it anywhere, but get them in the picture. Get them parking the car. Get them driving the boat. Get them making their wife more beautiful, having the wife feel herself become more beautiful. She just has this product. And I could go on, but that's the basis of it.
And I love that. And you talk about word pictures. Everybody who knows me knows I'm a highly committed introvert. I like people for 59 and three quarter minutes. And after that, I gotta go. Unless you're fascinating. I've got to go now. I've got cats to feed. I've got stuff to do. But I was talking with one of my, everybody wants to know how in the world, if you're an introvert, did you become known as a nerd in stilettos? One of my podcast guests was asking me what I do for a living, which nobody ever asked me that. That show's about you. It's about the guest. And I just kind of went, I said, well, I build websites practically in my sleep. I do social media marketing. I have a small digital agency. I'm a cat herder. I said, it looks like Nordstrom's threw up in my closet because I've got stilettos everywhere. And he said, call me when we're done. And I said, okay, now. And he said, why are you not marketing yourself as a nerd in stilettos? And he said, do you wear them? I said, okay, I have. You ought, literally, it looks like Nordstrom's just had an orgy in there. It really does. And I do wear my stilettos more often than I probably should in the house all by myself. And you just said it. It makes me feel different. It makes
And
me
that's all
feel,
that
oh,
counts.
exactly. I'll put on a long ankle length dress. I'll tie my hair up in a messy ponytail, put on my highest orange stilettos, depends on what I feel like, and off I go. And he caught, when I was talking with him, he said, Denise, it's such a great word picture. Why aren't you doing it? Listen, when the PR guy, the publicist for the Academy Awards tells you to do something, you do it.
Yeah. Without thinking,
Yeah.
without question, you might
So
ask a
I'm a
little
nerd in
clarification.
stilettos.
Yeah, and that's a great image.
Well, but it's
Attractive,
true.
but smarter than hell.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and I do have them. I've got shoes all over the place. Right now, I'm barefoot. So you never know what you're going to get. But I've got the shoes.
Mark, who was that? Marcos' wife.
Oh, yeah, Imelda Marcos.
Imelda Marcos,
Yeah, I'm not that nuts. Just let's put
there
that out of the
we go. I'm nuts, but I'm not that crazy.
way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think she had, didn't she have like 1,000 pairs when they
Oh,
finally broke into the palace? And
I think it's much more than that.
was it?
Yeah, I think so. It was insane level shoes, but I kind of felt for her a little bit. It's like you can't take them with you. Are you sure? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wanna. So we're talking about word pictures here. And while you were saying that, I kind of wrote down, but you can do that when you're working virtually as I do. I'm explaining to someone what their new website is going to do with them for them.
Yep.
And literally, Ben, this is a trick. I learned this a long time ago because I wanted to know. I will say, listen, sit down with a yellow pad like Ben Gay does. And I want you to go into your yet to be built website What do you see when you go in? Is somebody there greeting you? Is there something that you need to look at and go, ooh, let me go do that right now? Hang on a second. Sorry about that. I normally don't have that phone near me, but I'm expecting a call. Yeah, and I'll say, listen, go through it in your head, build those rooms, build those calls to action. Did somebody standing at a counter ignore you? Take care of that. Don't have that happen. And by the time they're through building word pictures on their notepad, they're like, okay, let's go. They can see it now.
Absolutely. And more importantly, their customers can see it and know, to keep it simple. And you're very good at doing the proper thing, but so many people who build websites or build their own, it's the propeller heads that wake up every morning. They're 25 years, the way I picture them, they're 25-year-old nerds. No offense, they don't have on stilettos. And they think their job is to change something that's already working. Gigi does a lot of stuff on eBay with her vintage jewelry thing. And sometime during every day, I hear something equivalent to, damn it, what's wrong? They've complicated some more. She said, why did they do that? And I said, picture the 25-year-old nerd with a propeller on his hat, who believes his job is to complicate things and change it and show off his computing skills. When I go to a website, what I want to know is, did I get to the right one? Where is the product I'm here for? I might want to read about the person, but where's the product I'm looking for and how much does it cost?
What's in it for me?
Yeah, what's
If
in it
you
for
keep
me?
that idea in your head, what's in it for me? But you have to travel that route. When you go into a, let's just say a Dollar Tree, my little Dollar Tree here, I love to go there. They'll say, hey, how are you doing? I'm great. I mean, they may be working with four people at the checkout counter. They're going to notice you walked in that door and say hello. And when I go into other stores and they don't say hello, I'm like, oh. So it's, I was trained.
I'll buy here if I have to.
That's exactly right, but I'm not coming back.
But I'd rather not. There's a lot. It's just awareness. And the other thing, one of my great sales secrets is I enter every place and every conversation, whether I'm buying or selling or just looking, as a customer. How are you going to treat me? How am I going to feel when we're done? What's in it for me? Did you try and find out what I want to be in it for me? Did you put my needs first? Some Tertius, the motto of the National Association of Professional Salespeople, and the punchline, the main theme in the closers part one, is Sum Tertius, which loosely translated is, my God first, the other fellow second, I am third. And if it's with a salesperson, if you have on the I am third hat and have a clear understanding of that, things will go in your career a whole lot better. And when I do it as a customer, I want to know, are you consciously aware of how you're treating me? And if it's not, you're treating me well, unless you have the only widget on earth, I'll figure out a way to get it somewhere else. And one of the things that just crossed my mind, I'm not sure people understand thoroughly enough. They no longer need you. If you're the one standing in front of them, figuratively or literally, who explains the product and the service, personally guarantees it, and said, I'll be here with you. Because people buy from people they know, like, trust, and with whom they feel safe. But if you miss those points and don't design a word picture that shows them pleasantly enjoying your product or service and the relationship with you, there's a thing at home or on their phone. I do it from home, called Amazon. I don't need you anymore.
Yeah, I don't own stock in there, but I ought to after all these years.
Yeah.
They ought to gift me some.
Yeah. And I almost don't like dealing with them for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is their attitude. They've gotten that domination attitude that AT&T has. And incorrectly, in AT&T's case, there are now lots of other options. But they get too big. They have the monopoly concept. And Amazon has fallen into that. But if you make it difficult or you're out of something that I need and you're not willing to go look in the stock room and see if you have it, I go to Amazon. And if that goes well, which it does 99% of the time, I'm never coming back to you for that ever because I found an easier way to do it. And once I don't come back to you for that, I don't come back to you for everything else I was going to buy on that trip. I hate to be out of an item like milk. And Gigi and I go to the store to get milk, which is roughly $200 from my experience.
Yep. Go for
Yeah,
cat food and see what happens.
exactly. Or Costco. A friend of
Oh.
mine, an accountant, said when Costco first opened up in this area, he was already familiar with it. It was the Price Club before that, but the same concept. He said, "Now, Ben, don't go broke saving money at Costco."
Yeah, how many pallets of rice can you really eat?
All right, we rarely went
Seriously.
because it's quite a drive to our local Costco, 10 or 15 miles, which is for me to get a quart of milk, quite a drive. But our average per visit, even if it was only every other month or something, was $750. And I got the list in my hand. The list had five items on it. If I'd stuck with the five items, even with the larger quantities, it'd have been $40 or $50. $750 and pushing a pallet, as you said.
My friend has a Sam's Club. She'll say, "You want to go?" No, no. If you buy a pallet of rice, I'll split it with you. But no, I'll stay here where I'm safe. Thank you.
Exactly. But if you don't do the things we've been talking about here in the sales session, sales portion of our session, they will go elsewhere and never come back.
This is true. And then that leads me to, if you're there, you're trying to sell something. Listen, I don't like to call it selling. I like to call it serving because what we're really doing, if we're doing our sales, our marketing, our persuasion correctly, we're actually helping people. We're not just going, "Oh, good, I got another commission. I can pay the house note now." That's not what we're doing. So one of the questions that I wanted to, well, it's a part of the chapter because we're going to run out soon, is what are they saying about you? You said from time to time, I'm asked to find out why a salesperson or a group of salespeople is succeeding or failing. What's being said about them? Are they showing up as, this is a term I don't really like, but servant leader? Are they showing up as somebody who will go into the stock room and find that widget that, probably a rat drug to the back and it's underneath a pile of dust, but it'll be found? Or are they just going, "I don't know why he's being, why is he here? This guy isn't any good."
What are they saying about you? I've had clients hire me many times for their companies. What are they saying about us? I've had a few astute salespeople want to find out what they're saying about him or her because they think, well, like your friend who corrected you on your self-image. They have one image of themselves that may not be the one the customers are picking up on. So find out, hire somebody to do it for you, become astute, become a listener, become an observer, but find out what they're thinking of you. Are you the person that you're the go-to guy? Somebody says, I'm thinking about getting in selling. Friends of mine, hopefully, would say, well, you need to talk to Ben Gay, and here's his website, and so and so. Because if you're going into selling and don't have the closers series, you're not in selling yet. As somebody said to me one time, I've never heard of the closers, and I said, how long have you been in selling, not counting yesterday? Or it's like going into a Christian bookstore and saying, Bible? We have a Bible? I didn't know that.
Oh my,
Yeah.
yeah.
So, I want to be at the top of their mind and on the tip of their tongue when they think of a subject in which I'm versed or sell it or what have you. And In a more generalized manner, and we've talked about this before, I want to be the go-to guy. What about this? I don't know, but call Ben Gay, because if he doesn't know, he knows somebody who does. I have, as you and I've discussed, my magic Rolodex, and rarely do I have to go more than two cards deep to find the answer that I'm looking for by calling this person or that person. And I have some go-to people that I use. If I don't know, I call them, and they know. My point being, they're my go-to people. I rarely have a problem in business where I can't solve or don't know who could solve it for me, that I don't call Merle Frazier. He was one of my early mentors. He's 90 something now, still in good health and sharp as he ever was. And he keeps his Rolodex or whatever. He's probably gone to a computer by now. I still have a Rolodex. He keeps his up to date. And he'll say, in his heavy Southern accent, "Oh, Ben, I was just talking to a guy yesterday who can help you with that. Got a pencil, phone number, et cetera." He's 90 something. The person he sent it to me might be 30 something. He's also kept his contacts fresh and up to date. One of the problems of getting older is many of my original contacts, friends, and mentors are gone. No, I can't call Napoleon Hill anymore. He died 50 some odd years ago. So, but I have fresh ones in my Rolodex who took their places, and I call them. So you want to be, when they're saying things about you want to be the go-to guy for whatever you're selling, the go-to guy in general. One of the benefits of that, by the way, is you get first look at lots of things that aren't your specialty. But we have investments where somebody call and ask about something. I said, "I don't know, but I'll find out. But tell me about that. Tell me about that product." I was one of the first people to sell video games, the old Pong game from Atari. And Nolan Bushnell became a friend of mine. And that came from a phone call. "Would you be interested in selling video games?" I said, "Probably. First, what's a video game?"
Curiosity is
Yeah,
your
sure, I could sell those. What is it?
and confidence. You have to have confidence in your stupidity.
Yeah,
So there's
well, I got confidence in my sales skill. Now
there
tell me
you
what
go.
it is we're selling, and we'll go from there. So anyway, what are they saying about you is really important. It's also really important that you know what they're saying about you, not what you think they are. Because I know lots of people who think that they are the Messiah and everybody else knows them as a jackass.
Yep, we all, and some days those are, it's us between one and four. I mean, who knows?
Exactly.
We can be a lot of different things during a single day. Ben, we're out of time, and I hate
All
this.
right.
We're going to continue in this chapter for a while, for probably another couple of weeks. So right now, I just put my bookmark on page
227.
231.
Oh, okay.
Here lies you. What are they saying about? So 2:30. We'll start again. No, 2:31. Some or all.
All right.
So,
My
any.
bookmark is there also.
Oh, good.
And
I love a man when I tell him what to do, he just does it. I like that. So, tell people where they can find you and your mentoring program, and of course, the sales Bibles, the closers.
if you're interested in the mentoring program, just shoot me an email and say somewhere in it, mentoring, and I'll send you back a letter that explains it. Nobody's going to call you. No one's going to bug you. It's a standardized letter that I cleverly wrote that looks personal, but it's not. But you'll understand the mentoring program. I work with people just like Dr. Napoleon Hill worked with me when he was hired to be my mentor. But I do it for a lot less money than he did. So shoot me an email at B as in Ben, F as in Frank, G as in Gay, the number 3, BFG3 at Directcon, DirectCon as in November, .net. Just say mentoring. We'll get some stuff off to you. And then if you don't have the closers or any, all or any of them, go to stores, STORES dot eBay dot com forward slash all one word Ronzoni Books, RONZONEBOOKS. And you'll see the full selection there. You won't see the closers part four yet because somebody we know is busy writing it as
I
I speak.
am. I'm so excited. I was telling, and I'll tell the story real quick. This morning I woke up and went, oh, and I didn't have my notepad handy, and I was writing a new chapter in my head. I mean, it was before I got my sheet off of my feet, I had it written. It was the craziest thing. I am so excited about this.
Put a notepad beside your bed with a pen attached.
Well, a cat knocked it off.
Oh,
That's
okay.
true. The cat didn't eat it. He knocked it off.
One, kill the cat. Two.
Oh, I'm going to tell Hamilton is an ass. You said that. Anyway, well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for being with us. We will be back next week working still on this chapter. It is very important. Go find those books. They really do need to be a part of your entrepreneurial library. And if you want to chat with me about anything, I'm easy to reach. It's toll free, 888-719-6711. You will have to leave a message. It does not ring in my office, but I will get the message and I'll call you back just as quickly as I can. Ben, thank you. I will see you next week.
Bless you. Enjoyed it as always, Denise. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.